I'm going to tell you again, we'll be speaking shortly with Ramsey Clark, and he attended this conference, VoicesForTheFive.com. It's the International Commission of Inquiry, London's Law Society, March 7 and 8. And I believe we're joined now by Mr. Ramsey Clark. Are you there, sir?
Goodbye, y'all.
How you doing? Hello?
Hi, Phil. How are you?
Oh, there you are. I'm sorry. Ramsey, you've just been to this conference in London, and I see the reports are coming out, and people can see the videos of it and all that. What did happen at that the International Commission of Inquiry in your mind that was particularly striking? What do you think was achieved there?
Well, I think they'll conclude the obvious that the five came to the United States to prevent violence, and that should not be a crime. They were coming as an early warning system to prevent further efforts by people in Miami who were been flying over Havana and dropping firebombs. Actually, a couple of people have been killed by it. And their purpose, leaving their home and families, was to be able to give an early warning to so that the violence could be, attacks against Cuba could be prevented.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, they're paying a very heavy price.
Yeah, I would ask you, the effort they did make probably did actually ensure some degree of clarity about what was going on with these efforts to attack Cuba and undermine it. As you say, they paid a heavy price. But for me, I recall that really focused the question. Very few people understood how subversive the U.S. policies were towards the government of Cuba.
Well, this is a powerful illustration of it. that little community in Miami and in New Jersey has played a major role in national elections, of all things. It's just absurd. And it's a sad group there. They're full of hatred because they, part of the aristocracy that was living off the fat of the land in Cuba, and they chose to leave, and they want it back.
Mm-hmm.
As if they had some right over the vast majority of the people.
I noticed that we're speaking to Ramsey Clark, former Attorney General of the United States, and who participated. It was a pretty elaborate conference and gathering in that you had several commissions, and they took evidence. My understanding is that some of the victims, some of the families, written about in the book by Keith Bolander and others, attended and actually gave evidence. Is that right?
That's right. And they had live interviews by film from Havana with the first of the five who's been finally free at last, mm-hmm. and is home again.
Mm-hmm.
Got two out now and three to go.
Mm-hmm.
But the five won't be free until the last one is free. That's Gerardo, and he's got two life sentences. So without a presidential pardon, mm-hmm. this tragic and wrongful case will still be inflicting pain for decades to come,
mm-hmm.
unless there's some action by the president of the government otherwise to free the five, all of them, and recognize them for what they were,
mm-hmm.
peacemakers,
mm-hmm.
trying to prevent violence from Miami against Cuba.
Yeah, I read that it must have been a rather emotional time because Rene Gonzalez, he wasn't given a visa to attend, but he did. They did, of course, through this magical thing called Skype, speak.
It was wonderful.
What kind of things did he say? It must have been a very emotional moment to see him.
Yeah, a great big screen, and he looked terrific and was very articulate and spoke. You wouldn't have thought he'd ever been in prison or ever had any hardship in his life. He just looked wonderful, and his head was together, and he spoke about they're having no regrets of their effort to prevent violence against Cuba, and they hope to provide some protection, and he hoped that we continue, that people who sought justice would continue to seek justice for all the five, so that this sad chapter can be closed.
Mm-hmm. Well, the United States, of course, after 9/11, made the war on terror was supposed to be a kind of moment where the whole world was supposed to unite against terrorist acts. And Cuba said, we're quite willing. We're the victims of terror. The government of the Islamic Republic of Iran said that. Governments like that in Libya and the one in Syria all said, we have problems with terrorists, and we would join hands with you. And they were talking about criminal terrorist activity that would meet any standard. So why do we end up with a situation where a man who was really put his life on the line to bring information to law enforcement, Rene Gonzalez, he can't even get a visa to attend a conference to extend the fight against terrorism?
Well, pretty pitiful. It's just, it's power politics doing the will of an ally. UK for Uncle Sam. Mm-hmm. They don't want to hear bad news about their friend, the United States, which is wrongfully confined these five young men, all of whom have beautiful families in Cuba who miss them terribly, to prison the United States for all these years for trying to prevent violence from the United States injuring people in Cuba.
Mm-hmm. You know, Ramsey, something always strikes me is that throughout history we have seen powerful leaders and great governments and leaders of empires who did show a capacity for compassion, for recognition that somebody might have done something that violates his laws, but understood, had grasp of what it's about, and actually exercised that executive authority to relieve the suffering of somebody who'd been in prison. I don't see that in the U.S. government at all, from one side to the other. Not the slightest hint of somebody who's actually strong and confident enough to say, well, I don't care to punish this person any longer.
Well, I'm afraid you're right, and it's not justice to Cuba and the five. It's, unwillingness to see the wrongfulness in our conduct at any time, any place, and the harm that we've done to people, the suffering we've caused in other countries because of our policies.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, unfortunately, their numbers are legion.
Mm-hmm.
And the countries involved are find them on five continents.
Actually, even the definition of what a terrorist is, you've had Senator McCain and members of the Democratic Party, and I guess Hillary Clinton joined in. They took a group that had been on their list attacking Iran and others. I forget their name, but they decided they weren't terrorists, and now they're welcome anywhere they want to go and, I guess, receive assistance.
Well, that shows that it's politics and not principle, doesn't it, though?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're speaking to Ramsey Clark. He's former Attorney General of the United States. He attended the International Commission of Inquiry and was in and spoke there and was part of the I forget how you broke it down, but they had various hearings. And it's voicesforthefive.com if you want to see the record of the conference and learn how you can help. It's voicesforthefive.com. Ramsey, everybody in the world now is being told to focus on the crisis in Ukraine, and it's the rhetoric is quite heated. And I guess I would really like to know, just to set this, it, my memory is you had a president, elected president, Mr. I forget his name, who said he didn't wanted to continue discussions with the EU on a trade agreement. That led to demonstrations. Then there was a internationally sort of supervised meeting where France, Poland, Germany observed a compromise between the president and the members of the opposition. They all signed the agreement. Then there was a moment of violence and a dramatic transfer of power where the opposition declared that they were the government, and they passed several resolutions interpreted as threatening to the state of the government of Russia, but also to Russians within Ukraine, that leading to the Crimea referendum. Now we have a pretty ugly kind of confrontation developing. I would like to know, where do you think America, the American government, the Western governments come in here? What should they, how are we going to go about ending this crisis?
Well, in my opinion, we began the crisis. We're the ones that made the threats and took the action, and we were totally insensitive to facts on the ground that Ukraine's a vast place. Crimea had been part of Russia for a long time. Tolstoy did some major war reporting down there and some major writing down there in his early years. And not just Crimea, but the larger region was Russian-speaking, Eastern-oriented, and we're trying to, you know, press the cards way back toward the Russian line, expand Western influence in Central Europe there beyond history and culture and political rights.
I'm struck by the phenomenon. People told us that it was wonderful development that Mr. Gorbachev brought about a new system and a parliamentary form of government and change of various the way the economy was run, and then it was a brand new Russia with elected governments and it has a parliament. When I listen, however, they talk as though they were the first time they ever saw a Bolshevik. When I listen to Washington, it's like nothing had changed. I guess the word for this is Russophobia. Why do we have Russophobia?
Well, it's manufactured, in my opinion, because it's it is a different culture. It's a big fault line in language and history and culture and between Western Europe and the East. And we're trying to push the cards back to they're off the card table on their side, you know. We have the whole table. Mm-hmm. If you took all of Ukraine, you'd have millions of Russians, both linguistically and culturally and ethnically and in the West, and it's because we want to corner Russia still, press it back to the smallest reasonable territory. I guess part of it's historical, but it's sure dangerous and harmful. It's making a lot of people live in hardship that shouldn't have to.
Despite the fact they're actually in the Crimea, that whole thing seems to have been handled very peacefully, very very little violence, and what violence there was seems to be kind of hard to pin down as to who caused it and how serious. But to now, at this, we have the anniversary of the beginning of the bombing of Serbia over the issue of Serbia's treatment of Kosovo, an unauthorized, no, it was not a UN-sanctioned bombing, and the Russians and many others in the world say, you guys seem to be very happy with that. Is that a fair point for them to raise?
Well, it certainly is. Our conduct toward Serbia and, well, the breakup of Yugoslavia was the biggest tragedy. Yugoslavia was one of the very few accomplishments of the end of World War One, and it promised and seemed to be able to deliver on the promise for years there, during Tito's time at least, peace in the Balkans. And now we've broken them back up just about like they were. The six countries that compose Yugoslavia are all separate and independent, and so to speak, and at least they're independent of a central government, and they're weak economically and politically, and dominated by outsiders, primarily from the West.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Ramsey Clark, former Attorney General of the United States, and one who's, of course, been part of the peace movement for a long time. How do you gauge the reaction? I see names of people like Ralph Nader. He at least had a very good title for his piece. He said, don't do as I do as I say. Some voices, I guess I need to ask you about the way media works in the U.S. and the Western world. I notice that former leader of Germany, Mr. Schroeder, and also Helmut Kohl, both actually registered demur on this point. Even Henry Kissinger said this is not something that should be happening. Ukraine should be treated like Finland. But boy, their voices are drowned out. Are there others speaking up? I know you are, but it's a kind of worrying silence, isn't it, or quiet? We can't get voices to ask questions about this government?
Well, it's there are voices out there that never get heard, you know. That's part of the problem. We've had demonstrations here in Manhattan several times a week on these issues, and you can't even find them in the newspaper. Mm-hmm. You don't find them on TV. Maybe have one there up there this afternoon. I was supposed to go to, but I couldn't do it. And nobody will hear about it, except they told me there are about 400 people up there protesting at the UN on exactly what we've been talking about. But they're... The press doesn't cover them, but the press will, you know, glorify anyone that stands up for breaking up what used to be called the Eastern Bloc, which doesn't have many more unbroken parts to it.
Yeah. Apropos of that, in this issue of Russophobia, what I've noticed, among other things, and I'd like your thoughts on it, is that When, if the Russian media produces a story and it turns out to be true, the rebuttal form of our editorials in the Toronto Star and New York Times is, well, that's the Russians. But in the case of Victoria Nuland's comments, which I think you could have a whole political science course devoted to analyzing what she was talking about there in Ukrainian with the Ukrainian leadership, and then more recently the comments which are affirmed to have happened, the comment between Lady Ashton and the Estonian foreign minister, where the Estonian foreign minister said, you know, the snipers at Maidan Square were apparently supported by the opposition group, not by the government, and there ought to be an investigation. I don't see anybody in the West calling for one. And also their answer is, well, you see, we got that from the Russians, even though both those conversations are confirmed.
Well, we've got a real problem with our international media that is accessible to us. They report one side, one viewpoint, and their advocates, not just the facts, ma'am, reporters trying to give us the truth and let us decide for ourselves what's right and wrong.
Yeah.
It's pretty pretty dangerous. And the people have finally said, well, what can we do? You know, we don't have the facts, and we worry about our job, and kids not doing well in school, so we just stay home and do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And that way these imperial policies continue and prevail with all the danger they bring.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no need for this, absolutely no need. It's hard to imagine why the governments of the West think it's important to break up Ukraine, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just pressing the East to the wall.
Yeah, the question was asked today, I noticed, of the Mr. Lavrov, and he said, well, about our present situation, he said, I don't understand why you don't in Kiev decide to have an election before you start making all these dramatic decisions, and also take some of these questions to the people. If what you're calling, you're going to call yourself a government that's democratic, why aren't you working on having an election so the people can decide who they want to lead them? And he said, then we could take up the issues of relations between states and trade policies and such.
Well, power doesn't want the people to decide. Power wants to have its way. The people there may not want what power in the West wants, which is domination. It presses mm-hmm. presses to the border of Russia.
Yeah, I want to ask you, too, if I get by way of winding up here, probably the most memorable, it's going to the quote with the most legs on it, is going to be the John Kerry telling the world that this is not the 19th century. You cannot invade countries just on false pretext. And I was wondering if he eliminated the 19th century as a way to do things, because wasn't it the 19th century that your home state of Texas got annexed by the United States?
1845.
We stole it fair and square, right?
Yeah, right. Became Republic in 1836, but didn't last very long. It was never intended, because Crockett and Houston, those guys went down there to get it for the United States in the first place. I don't think anybody ever doubted that. Yeah. It was just that little interim period where there was an editorial in the Matamoros Eagle in 1836, December. It said the American eagle is more voracious even than the Russian bear, and it will soon take Texas from our country, which could the planes of which could feed all of our people.
Wow.
That's 1836. And then next year you have the Alamo and San Jacinto, Battle of San Jacinto, the Republic of Texas.
Well, the key thing about remembering it is that nobody does actually remember. They do say to remember it. They just don't remember what it was. But Kerry is can he believe that American people don't remember that or notice that this sounds kind of ignorant?
I'm not sure that he thinks about it. He just thinks he can get away with it because it's easy.
Mm-hmm.
And he has, hasn't he?
Yeah, so far.
And the government as a whole does constantly.
Yeah. Well, I'm always happy to know that the polls show the American people are opposed to their wars, no matter what their little speeches are. They didn't want to go to Syria against Syria, and we'll see if they can resist this.
Yeah, the problem is that people haven't insisted on their right to determine the issues. I think we're so fed up with the wars we can hardly stand it, but we don't see how we stop it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't think it's our we elect these guys. They're supposed to take care of these problems.
It is the best way. Ramsey Clark, it's a great pleasure to talk to you. Congratulations on that successful conference in London, and we follow your work closely, and we really appreciate your being a guest.
Well, it's wonderful to be with you always.
Okie doke.
And hope to see you for a long.
Okie doke.
Come on down to the Big Apple.
I'll do that. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. VoicesForTheCuban5.com. That was Ramsey Clark. I misspoke earlier. I called Hamid Karzai. I called him Muhammad. It's actually Hamid Karzai. You're listening to Taylor Report, CIET 9.5. We're on Facebook, as I say, face it, we're on Facebook, facebook.com/TheTaylorReport. And we hope you'll go there. Write to us, taylor@ciut.fm. I think we accomplished a few things. Phil, you're going to say something.
No, I'm just going to say how it's
you just looked eloquent.
Wonderful to have that little Texas history lesson and say that even in 1836, other countries were noticing how voracious the Americans were becoming.
Well, actually, yes, I mean, including many Texans. But it gives me a chance to point out that the first thing they did after they annexed Texas was, of course, enforce Americans' the right to own slaves and imported slaves to Texas, overturning the law of Mexico, which had abolished slavery. So the great annexation of Texas, of which Americans are so proud, which, of course, did not permit any slave to vote, and then brought the U.S. Constitution and Bill of Rights and everything to land on their heads and say, you're a slave, that was all accomplished by the U.S. government. And that's why John Kerry says you can't go by the 19th century because we did all of our main stealing in the 19th century. That's all in the bank, so you can't touch that. You've been listening to the Taylor Report at CIET 89.5 FM.